Too often, student choice and voice is stifled in schools. Choice Literacy offers reliable resources from in-the-field teachers and literacy leaders who uplift choice and voice even with difficult circumstances, forced mandates, or demanding curriculum. Welcome to the Big Fresh Choice Literacy Podcast. I'm Ruth Ayers. This week, Bitsy Parks wrote the lead essay, It Will Make You Chuckle, and highlights the importance of accepting less than perfection as we grow and learn. Bitsy is this month's featured contributor. She is a first grade teacher as well as an adjunct professor at Lewis and Clark College in Portland, Oregon. I admire the way Bitsy values approximation of her young readers and writers. Make sure to check out her course called The Gradual Release of the Primary Classroom Library. She guides us through how to use the classroom library to uplift students as readers.
We are where we are. My teenagers and I enjoy watching late night TV together. Recently, they began watching seasons of Survivor, and although I didn't gravitate toward their decision, once it was on the screen every night, I found myself looped into the drama of recent seasons. When we hit a late night TV watching drought, my son suggested watching season 2 because he was curious about the early seasons. We started it up and immediately noticed the stark differences between season 2 and season 38, the last season we had watched. Season 2 was less glitzy. The host wasn't at ease in his questioning at tribal councils, and he was less vocal during challenges. The film editing was rougher. What we were noticing at the beginning of the episode, we were laughing at by the end. We were charmed by how much the show evolved over the 40-ish seasons, from show ideas to technology. Recently, I spent some time revisiting the first videos I made for gradual release of the Primary Classroom Library, a course for choice literacy. When I made the videos just a few years ago, the technology was new to me and it felt clunky. I had little background knowledge aside from the YouTubers I occasionally saw on my kids' iPads. I was willing to try but had no idea how to do it. To prepare, I diligently watched some tutorials, got the software sorted out, and gave it a whirl. And then another whirl. And another. I finally had to stop trying to improve the videos. They were what they were, and I was what I was. Who would have thought that making videos would become such a part of my teaching life? I've been in remote teaching for almost a year. Filming myself and creating videos is part of my teaching routine. Since recording my library series for Choice Literacy, I have learned so much. While watching the library videos, I couldn't help but cringe at myself, and I even asked if I could remake the videos. Although this was an option, I was asked if it would be better to put my energy into looking ahead and creating new content based on my current passions and curiosities. I realized it was the right advice. Survivor doesn't go back and refilm or even re-edit past seasons. It just keeps looking ahead, learning and growing and improving the production. Although my first videos may feel clunky to me, they're just as worthwhile to watch. It still takes me several attempts to get a clip I like, and I still cringe when I'm watching myself on video, but I'm learning to be better at accepting that this is where I am. Maybe when I'm at season 38, it will all look as fluid as Survivor. But until then, I'll keep at it, learning and growing my teaching and using video to enhance my students' experience and to share it with others.
We know how to navigate the pressures that stifle student choice and voice because our contributors are in the field and figuring out how to continue to honor student choice and voice. Each week, we publish 4 to 6 new features in our Classy Classroom content. In 4 notebook pages to scaffold persuasive writing, I, Ruth Ayers, share 4 examples of notebook pages to help students balance facts and emotions when writing persuasively. In the article, I write, "My notebook is a power tool in my writing life, which is mostly non-narrative. I could not survive without my writing notebook because it allows me to discover the topics I care about and collect ideas to learn more and solidify my thinking. When I'm writing persuasively, my notebook becomes the place I find my voice and learn to balance facts and emotions as I attempt to change hearts and minds with my words." In a video, Christy Rush Levine helps Ezekiel draft his literary analysis. In an encore video from 2012, Heather Rader uses Kincaid's intricate system for analyzing books to build a writing agenda in this writing conference. In their article, "Many Uses for Mentor Texts to Teach Argument," Tara Barnett and Kate Mills share the ways they use mentor texts in targeted ways to teach argument writing and move students away from 5-paragraph themes. They join the podcast to share more about the way they find and use mentor texts to uplift students in becoming stronger opinion writers. It is a delightful conversation and reminded me of the importance of teachers engaging in the work of mentor text to put the right text in the hands of our students. Kate Mills and Tara Barnett have been writing for Choice Literacy for several years. At one point, you co-taught together. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. We met when we started co-teaching fourth grade together 12 years ago. And total, I think we co-taught for 4 years and then started a blog together after we weren't co-teaching together anymore. And then after that, the blog sort of led us to Choice Literacy.
Okay. And so since then, Kate, you're an instructional coach?
Right. I'm currently a literacy coach for kindergarten to fifth grade teachers.
And Tara, you became a seventh grade language arts teacher.
Yeah, I currently teach sixth and seventh grade literacy.
Mm-hmm. So you guys are in New Jersey and are continuing to honor student choice and voice, even as you navigate this school year. What does it look like for you?
For me this year, and this is Tara, we started out our year hybrid, which I know a lot of people did. And then in November, we transitioned to kids being back 5 days, 100%. So I have all of my students every day, but we've had a bunch of times since then, a bunch, maybe like 2 or 3, where we've gone all virtual because of cases. So it's a lot of ups and downs this year.
And our district was similar. We also started hybrid, and our district put 2 teachers in every classroom, K-5, so that if a teacher was out for any reason, there would be a second teacher to take over. So until Christmas, I was co-teaching a fifth grade classroom for half of the week and then doing my coaching work the other half. After Christmas, we also started to transition back to more in-person days. And right now, everybody in the district is back in person, although we've had, like most weeks since the new year, we've been remote, at least part of the district, for a few weeks.
It's a year where we're just learning to be flexible.
Right.
Well, welcome to the Big Fresh podcast. I'm so glad that you guys took some time to talk with us. Today, we're going to talk about your article, "Many Uses for Mentor Text to Teach Argument." You opened this article concerned about a situation with your students writing argument essays. They were writing 5-paragraph essays, and as you write in the article, "We started to see students plugging details into their 5-paragraph outlines like they were completing a math formula." I just love the metaphor there because I completely understand what you noticed. And so you noted that the writing checked the boxes but didn't show deep thinking. Tell us more about why this attitude is problematic. Why are you concerned with all the boxes being dutifully checked?
So basically, I feel like by the time our writers are in 6th or 7th grade and they've been in a writing workshop, we know that they've learned the structure of a 5-paragraph essay. And I think early on, the structure can support them. But if they start to think that's the only way to present their ideas, like in this 5-paragraph essay format, we both think it can limit them and stifle their voices a bit, because not every idea fits inside five paragraphs, right? So we've seen kids who have a claim and they want to write about it, and they may only have two strong reasons to support their claim. So should they abandon it because they don't have three, or should they pick a third reason that isn't really that strong just so they can fill in those five paragraphs? And we definitely don't want that happening. We want their writing to be authentic and interesting to readers and engaging to them when they write it. And that just doesn't always mean a five paragraph writing. And we've started to look, when you look in the real world for those five paragraph essays, they just don't really exist at all. And this is really telling. So we're thinking, why are we teaching kids that this is the accepted structure when it's not how we really write? And it's not that five paragraphs is taboo. We just want them to see it's not the only way that they can write an essay.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I remember looking for the five paragraph essay too, when I was in a seventh grade classroom, trying to find that in the real world. And it is difficult to find. From the first time I started reading your articles, I connected with you because you seem straight from the era of the Dons, Graves and Murray, who insisted that kids learn to write in authentic ways and have ownership in their writing choices. And it's exactly this, that they were looking for what's happening in the real world and asking kids to do the same thing. And you're carrying these tenets on today. So when you notice your students going through the motions to get a grade, you turn to doing the work yourselves to find mentors to inspire students to be more authentic in their writing choices. Why is it important to take the time to do this work ourselves?
So I think part of it comes from when we learned how to do the work, it's how we were taught to do it ourselves. And some of that was from the curriculum supervisor in our district, who was she referred to Don Graves and Don Murray a lot. And then also our district really valued professional development. So at the beginning of our year's teaching, we had a lot of training with the Teachers College Reading and Writing Project. And I can remember being a first year teacher and the staff developers insisting that we try the work ourselves as teachers rather than them giving us solutions to the problems we were looking for answers for. And the truth is, right, as a new teacher who was really overwhelmed, not sure about anything I was doing, I didn't really want to spend the time trying the work. But of course, in the end, doing the work myself as a writer allowed me to experience what we're asking kids to do. Our students are being asked to try new things daily. And as adults, we often forget what that's like. And so some of it, I think, is being able to empathize with what we're asking kids to do. But also, the more important reason is that it shows kids that we're in the work with them. It's not us, the teachers, telling you, the students, what to do, but instead it's us together as a community of writers doing this work that writers do. It's more authentic, for sure. And having gone through the work myself allows me to be more explicit in my teaching. It helps me discover the steps that I could then teach a student to try to follow it and do the work themselves.
And then building on that, I find it really important too to do the work of finding mentor texts that match your class. So what's relevant and interesting to kids is always changing. So we try to choose those texts that match our kids. So when I have a group of kids who are really interested in sports, I have, an article about football and concussions that works really well for them that they get really engaged into. So I think that's another reason to do that work of finding the mentors yourself.
Yeah, I think about when I was first learning how to teach in a workshop. I started off with the writing workshop by Joanne Portalupi and Ralph Fletcher. It's a black book. I don't know if you know it or not, but in there's two lessons. There's lesson for day one and day two to kick off your workshop. And then after that, you kind of have to figure it out as you go. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought how fortunate I was to learn to teach at that time before things were kind of figured out, because I got to learn to do the work myself. And that's what I hear you're saying. I appreciated, Kate, what you said about how, you didn't want to do it. There's a million and one other things to do.
It's hard. Yeah, right. It's hard. And I think it is even harder now that curriculum is sort of written already for kids, right? Your example of the Ralph Fletcher book and having to, like, that required you to watch your kids and be responsive to what they were doing, right? Instead of just following through mm-hmm. like a sequence unit of study for yourself.
Mm-hmm. And it is, it's a blessing and a curse at the same time, because we know so much more about how kids learn and how to teach them than what we've ever known before. And at the same time, what resonated with your article is the way that you're still following kids. So I know you have this curriculum that you're following, and at the same time, you're choosing to follow what they need and where their interests are.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're looking for a mentor text, Tara, you talked a little bit about what the kids' interests are, but what else are you looking for in the right mentor text?
So I look for writing that I admire and enjoy as well. Yeah, I'm also looking for specific things that I think my kids need. So just like last week, I was teaching students how to include direct text evidence in their writing, because they were often doing that in really awkward ways that was distracting. Like, they would just write things like, here's some evidence, and then they'd plop it in there. And it's kind of hard to explain to them, like, why this doesn't work well. They're sort of like, I'm telling you, I'm putting evidence and I'm putting it there. And then I was looking in my Twitter feed, and President Obama wrote this tweet where he embedded a quote from Amanda Gorman, and he embedded it in his own sentence. And we had just been trying to practice that. So it was exactly the work we were doing and that some kids were really struggling with. So I was really excited, just in the way that only a literacy teacher can get about that, to show this real life example of someone embedding text evidence into a sentence seamlessly, to show, like, that's why we do that. And then here's a mentor that can teach us to do that. So I think that showing kids authentic writing that exists in the world is just really important.
I think it's also important that we're sure that mentor texts are accessible to kids. We want them to be able to see themselves in the mentor text, to believe that they can do what that writer is doing. The mentor text, of course, has to be rich, but not so far beyond the reach of the students that they view it as, that's just something a published author can do that I would never be able to do. I also think it's important that teachers get a lot of mileage out of a mentor text. So when I'm choosing them, I often pick mentors that can also be really good as read-alouds and have lots of things that we can teach from it, instead mm-hmm. of, you know, like the perfect lead. It has like many things that we could teach, so that we're not taking time to read a text that we just use for one thing, but we get multiple days of teaching out of it. And I think the last thing in the last year especially is I've been thinking about having more diverse texts so that they're more representative of students and their experiences, mm-hmm. and making simple swaps like Jabari jumps for Owl Moon in a personal narrative unit of study, for example, like, gives kids a chance to see more diversity in characters, but still teaching the same craft that we're trying to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is an important consideration, and just continuing to stay up to date with our mentor text. It's wise what you're saying about getting a lot of mileage out of text, because we want kids to know them so well that we can turn to them in all kinds of moves and in all different phases of the writing process. So in your article, you're talking about the different ways that you're using mentor text. So you talk about choosing a topic, uncovering craft, and guiding a conference. You're expanding students' visions to include so much more than just checking boxes. How does this approach allow meaningful choice and a stronger voice in writing?
So I guess our overall goal is that students are going to see that any text can be a mentor, and that they can turn to a mentor text whenever they need guidance or inspiration in writing. I really admire the work of Rebecca Odell and Allison Marchetti from Moving Writers. Mm-hmm. And I just love the way that they're always finding mentor texts in all these unconventional places. Like, you're reading a newspaper. It's like, I picture myself, you're reading the newspaper on a Sunday, sipping coffee, and you just see something. And it made me start looking at writing in a whole new way and my own reading in a new way. Like, a few years ago, I was at the Central Park Zoo with my kids, and we were reading the description of animals outside their habitats. And all of a sudden I like look at it and I start taking pictures of the writing outside. And my husband's kind of looking at me a little funny, like, what are you doing? You're not even taking pictures of the animals. And I was like, I'm taking pictures when we write informational text. So I like fill up my phone with screenshots like these. And a lot I haven't used yet, but I feel like I'm always looking. And then because I can bring this back to students, one of my students asked me for some help recently in punctuating dialogue in a story that she was writing. And when I was sitting next to her, I just opened up her independent book and found a place of dialogue because I want her to know that she doesn't need something I give her. Any writing can be a mentor, like the mentors or mentor texts are everywhere all around us.
I love that example of the zoo. I feel like sharing that with your students, right, would help them start to see possibilities around them too.
Right.
I think teaching students to use mentor texts well, to notice and name the work that they see and then try it themselves, is, as a teacher, some of the most fun work in writing workshop. And mimicking the moves of mentors in this way really pushes writers or kid writers, right, to do things that they wouldn't have done otherwise. I think it changes writers. And if they can read a mentor text and name what the mentor is doing and then try it, they have endless teachers for themselves, especially mm-hmm. if they're able to, like Tara, like see mentors in like any part of their life when they're out in the world.
And it's preparing them for work they can do forever. Whenever they get stuck, mm-hmm. they know that they can turn back to a mentor text and know how to do that. And it's fun. It's enjoyable to find mentors in the world and to have this playful approach to writing, which springboards into how you were talking about using mentor text during writing celebrations. So I'd love to hear more about this.
One thing that can be fun to do in celebrations is to have students pair a part of their writing side by side, the part of a mentor text that helped them, sort of like showing, here's the mentor move and here's my try with it. And then also, of course, giving students a chance to make their published or polished text more public so that they become mentors for others, like adding it to a mentor text bin organized by genre. We always needed those in our room mm-hmm. for independent projects that kids were doing so that their published pieces become for other writers to refer to as mentors in the future too.
You close the article by claiming mentor texts are the most powerful way you know to support writers throughout the writing process. This is a bold statement. What are some words of advice to a teacher who would like to help students move away from checking boxes?
So I think that without being too repetitive, I think one of the most important things is that once you've chosen a mentor text you love and one that's accessible to your students, you need to try the work yourself. So if you're going to look at the way an author wrote their lead, try to do that naming work yourself first. It's like, what do you see? Why did the author do this? And then write and try doing that work that you're going to ask your students to do yourself, because it will help you to anticipate how the work will feel for your students.
It's such wise advice. Kate and Tara, I've really enjoyed talking with you and just getting to know you a little bit more as writing teachers. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Ruth.
Thanks for having us.
Our contributors are listening and looking hard for those spontaneous, teachable moments when they can move a child forward as a reader and writer. Each week, we offer free articles to empower all educators to do the same. Have you checked out the Choice Literacy Book Club? The link is in the show notes, and you can find us with the hashtag Choice Literacy Book Club. Christy Rush Levine selected an Own Voices middle grade fantasy novel for the February read. This is free for all, and we hope you will join us. The best way to grow as a teacher is to engage in the work as a reader yourself. In A Fresh Take on Persuasive Writing, Louise Robleski uses video clips, children's literature, and newspaper articles to teach middle school students new ways to craft persuasive writing. This article was first published in 2019 and is now free for all. Melissa Quimby shares how she encourages her students to consider their audience when writing. In Dear Young Writer, Your Audience Matters, Melissa offers how-to steps and wise advice to lift the level of writing in her classroom. New York Times critics A.O. Scott, Maya Phillips, Jennifer Sazzali, and John Pirelli's share their review writing advice for students. Their suggestions include express a strong opinion, use descriptive details, and don't be afraid to edit. I'm sure you'll find lots of mileage out of this quick video. Our Leaders Lounge is dedicated to literacy coaches and school leaders, and you will find 2 to 4 additional new features each week. In Plan It, Don't Wing It, Heather Fisher works with teachers to create a tool to make conversations in classrooms more thoughtful and clearly defined around learning topics. How do you help students move away from a casual tone in formal writing? This month's new PD2Go shares how to help student writers understand and develop a scholarly voice. Christy Rush Levine's article about scholarly voice is the anchor of this session. Have you accessed our PD2Go resources? If you plan professional learning, then PD2Go is just the jumpstart you need to make planning for a session a breeze. We do the legwork of connecting timely content and organizing the agenda, as well as creating a slide deck for you to quickly pull together everything you need to lead a professional learning session. You will also find a template to help deliver PD2Go remotely. In a new course, Matt Renwick guides instructional leaders to implement and strengthen instructional literacy walks. Through literacy walks, leaders seek out promising practices, note and name them during formative visits, and lead coaching conversations with teachers. The outcome is not only school improvement, especially in literacy, but also a community of learners who engages in continuous improvement as a natural stance. This course is free to Literacy Leader members. We know the pressure that can come from curriculum mandates, so Choice Literacy is a proudly independent community. We are not associated with any commercial publisher. We don't recommend packaged or scripted programs. You can trust our content because it is created by people just like you, educators who show up to school each day and are enamored by students. You can find links to all of the articles discussed in the show notes, or sign up for the Big Fresh newsletter so you can have the links delivered directly to your inbox. Keep offering choice and voice to students in what they read and write, because everyone deserves for their choice and voice to be valued. Shine on, everyone.